Final hour. Hope you are having a good one. Taking you up till 7 o'clock. 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Talking about the moves in Major League Baseball today. And if you're a fan of the Giants, if you're a fan of the Dodgers or one other team, you know, who made the best moves today? We're also talking some NFL football. Who do you want as the starting quarterback if you're a fan of the San Francisco 49ers? And was, you know, talking about the Olympics for a couple minutes with the reports that we're hearing, or some of the reports. I'm not making it sound like all of Rio is bad. I'm not intimating that at all. What I'm saying is there's a lot of reason for alarm down in Rio de Janeiro. Let's get to Mike in Concord. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Grant. How are you?
I'm well, Mike.
Good. I'd like to ask you a question. How long have we known about the Zika virus? A year, year and a half or so?
Correct.
Okay. Why didn't they cancel Rio and go somewhere else?
That's a fabulous question. To me, from what I'm hearing, the issues with the unsanitary waters and things of that nature because of the raw sewage that is everywhere is a lot more of a concern than the Zika virus based on what I've been reading.
Okay. Then why don't they cancel those, like, rowing?
I'm with you.
I'm a baseball and a football guy.
I'm with you.
The rowing and what other else?
The marathon swimmers, they're swimming right in that water. I mean,
you've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. I mean, that the marathon course is right in one of the most concentrated areas of the report that I just read.
So what's going to happen if some of our athletes or other athletes from other countries get sick?
Well, Mike, I'm going to tell you. You use the word if. I'm going to use the word when, because there's no, I'm serious. There is no chance that some athletes, whether they're, you know, American or whatever, there are going to be athletes that get sick. And you know what?
Possibly die.
It could. And we will be hearing about this after the Olympics. And then, Mike, the question that you asked me before the Olympics will be asked after the Olympics. Why on earth would they allow these athletes to, you know, participate in their sport of choice in such lethal, horrible conditions?
I agree, 1,000%.
To say that it's sad, that's not even the right adjective. I'm not even sure what to use. Is it? I mean, help me out here, Mike. I mean,
it
defies logic. It defies common sense, Mike, that like the International Olympic Committee and the Olympic organizers would allow athletes to, you know, put themselves in harm's way, knowing what they know. I mean, that's just, I don't get it, Mike. I mean, I don't get it.
And I wanted to ask you about Jimmy Walker yesterday.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It reminded me of Phil Mickelson when he blew a tee shot up into the tree or the...
Yeah, on 18th at the U.S. Open. Yep.
Correct. Into the, what do you call it, where the fancy people who have a lot of money sit and
the VIP, the VIP areas, the tents and stuff. Yes.
Correct. Both those caddies should have said, here's a 5-iron for this shot, and either an 8 or a 9. What do you want? And take the risk out of possibly losing.
How about John Vandeveld at the British Open at Carnoustie with a 3-shot lead, and he teed off with a driver?
I can still see him sitting, standing in the water, rolling up his tail legs.
Yeah, absolutely. How about that?
So who won that one? I forget now. Who won that British Open?
Gosh, you know what? I can't even remember who he lost to. I'm sorry. I should know that. But John Vandeveld had a 3-stroke lead and lost the tournament on the 18th at Carnoustie.
I watched that Sunday morning. It was incredible.
It went to a playoff, actually. It went to a playoff. You know, actually, he had a 2-shot lead. He had a 3-shot lead. He got a triple, and it went to a playoff, didn't it?
I could be wrong.
Yes, it did. It went to a playoff.
Well, I bet you a dollar to a donut if it did. Was he in the playoff?
Yes, he was.
Oh, then I completely forgot that. Then okay, and who won? I forget.
I'll tell you right now. I'm going to look it up as you're speaking to me. But seriously, that was one. That was one of the. It was 1999, and he had that lead going to the 18th. He went to the 18th. He needed a double bogey. That's right, and he got a triple bogey, and it went to a playoff 3-shot lead. And how about that, huh?
Sad.
Yeah, Justin Leonard and Paul Lowry, 3-way playoff.
And Paul Lowry
won in the playoff, but it was a 3-way playoff between John Vandeveld, Justin Leonard, and Paul Lowry.
Oh, that's almost as bad as who's the one guy who hit the ball twice out of the rough? I'm drawing a blank.
Now, you got me there, but I got to tell you, that I don't think the meltdown that we saw at the British Open in 99, I don't think that's the worst thing I've ever seen on a golf course.
I agree.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We're going to be with you right up till 6:30 coming up in the next segment in about 7-8 minutes or so. We'll talk some NFL football. Never too early to talk NFL football. And we've got training camps going on. Chris Burke, NFL reporter for Sports Illustrated, will be coming on with us in a little bit. I've got to believe that is the biggest meltdown. And we've seen Greg Norman with a huge lead at the Masters. We've seen, but to John Vandeveld on the 18th, with that type of a lead, and even the announcers, you know, I remember watching live, they were like, what on earth is he thinking, taking the driver out? And then rather than just laying up and hitting the green with his third shot, he decided to go for the green with his second shot. Worst collapse I've ever seen in all of golf. I don't think you can top that. I really don't. All right, if you want to call 339-1140, that's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. You know, Mike and I and others, and we talk about, you know, the Olympics, and I really mean this. I mean, I really hope that we're not talking about this a month from now and, you know, we've got either a fatality or athletes that are in danger, that are in intensive care, that have, you know, really serious illnesses. You know, that I'm saying, that I'm really hoping that will not be some of the stories coming out of Rio de Janeiro, because that would be the worst, you know? That would be awful. It really would. All right, let's get to Spencer in Stockton. What's up, Spence?
Hey, what's up, Grant? How you doing, man?
Good. What's happening?
Hey, I was going to talk to you. So the gentleman before me called and said, why didn't we change the Olympics?
Yep.
Well, then I feel like the answer to that question would be, doesn't it take about 3 years, 4 years to plan for this?
Well, yes, it does. But they could have postponed the Olympics. They could have. There are measures that they could have done. There were actually a year to year and a half ago, there were many that were saying the games need to be postponed. I mean, that was real talk about postponing the Olympics in Rio. Now, could you just move it somewhere else? You would need more than a year in able to do that. You could go to a area that already has Olympic facilities from the past, but the security and everything else, yeah, that's not something you can do in 6 months, that's for sure. All right, we'll talk some NFL football with Chris Burke of Sports Illustrated next. All right, we're having a little trouble getting a hold of Chris Burke, so if we do, we'll get him on. If you want to call the show, 339-1140, that's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. We're with you until the top of the hour. We are talking about a variety of topics. And, you know, again, maybe the Olympics will be great. And maybe we won't have any issues. We can only hope so. But, you know, you cannot, you know, you just got to hope that, you know, athletes from around the world and the spectators and the broadcasters and, you know, the people that have to cover these events, you know, it's not just the athletes. You know, it's the technicians. It's the members of the media. I mean, the camera crews that have to be out on the water, you know, shooting video of this. I mean, it's just not the athletes. I think we have to be aware of that. All right, if you want to call the program, 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. If you're a fan of the Giants, I still would like to get your input as they will start a East Coast road trip in Philadelphia, then go to Washington. The A's say goodbye to Josh Reddick and Rich Hill. And when you talk about, you know, the A's and what they got back, It seems like we have to talk about this every year. Although 3 years ago, you know, they tried to go for the gusto by getting John Lester, and that backfired on him. I know it's frustrating for the A's, and you know what? We talk about this all too often. You know, we talk about the frustration being an A's fan. It's not easy. It's not easy. You know, Josh Reddick, a fan favorite, and now he's playing for the L.A. Dodgers. So if you want to talk about that, if you want to talk Raiders, 49ers, give me a shout, 339-1140. And again, 800-920-1140. Let's get to some phone calls. Why don't we start with Mike in Sacramento. Mike, we'll get to you first. How are you?
Hey, Grant. How you doing, buddy?
Mike, I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. It's always good to talk to you and hear your voice.
Thank you.
I wanted to make some predictions for the Raiders this year.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I'm going to say 10-6. We get a home game in the playoffs.
All right.
Derek Carr throws for over 4,000. Clive Walford gets 10 touchdowns this season and is the number one tight end in the NFL. That's my bold prediction for the Raiders.
Wow, that's a bold prediction. I mean, I could see Carr throwing for 4,000 with the way the game's played. In this day and age, I can't see Wolford having 10 touchdowns. That, to me, would be shocking.
I see the way the kid plays. I mean, I know he's coming back off that ATV injury
right.
And everything, but in training camp, he looks good. He looks healthy.
Yeah. I had him on my show 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that kid.
I think he's good. But, I mean, 10 touchdowns, I mean, that's a lot, especially with Amari Cooper on the field. Murray is the running back. And I'm not saying that he won't have a good year, but 10 touchdowns, that's a lot.
I think he's going to hit 10 touchdowns. Who's that fullback? Not Marcel Reese. It's the other fullback, Odwale or something
right.
like
yes.
that.
Right. Yes. Yes.
He's going to have a big year too.
I think the Raiders, if they stay healthy at their skill positions, you know, they've got a chance to win 9 or 10 games. I don't disagree with that. I don't think the division's as strong as it's been, namely because of what's going on in Denver with Sanchez. I think Kansas City is going to be right there as well.
Yeah, I think Kansas City is going to be tough. I even think Denver and any divisional games is going to be tough. I mean, even the Chargers. Let's not look past Philip Rivers. How talented is he? You know.
Yep. I just don't like their supporting cast in San Diego. I think they're out of all the teams, Mike. They're at the bottom. I think the Raiders are better. Denver's better. In my opinion, Kansas City's better.
Yeah, I mean that's. I think it's going to go down like probably it's going to be Raiders. That's my prediction. Chiefs, Broncos, and then you know it'll be San Diego. But either way, I mean, I'm very, very excited. Hey, this was the last weekend of 2016 that we're not going to have football. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing I don't like. I think the Raider fans should be very upset about this. Is that their Monday night game is not in Oakland? It's down in Mexico City. I'm not a fan of that. I think that's awful.
Yeah, we lose a home game. That's awesome. So we get 7 home games this year. The season tickets,
yep.
I hope the prices went down on those.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Grant.
My pleasure. Tony and Modesto, you're next here. Hello, Tony.
Hey, Grant, how you doing?
I'm fine, Tony. What's up?
Hey, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Olympics. But one thing, these athletes, they're adults. And any adult, because the culture we live in, the society we live in, they have a choice. You want to be an athlete, you want to go to another country to compete, you live with the consequences.
Hey, Tony, like Tony, no athlete on the face of the planet should have to participate in their event in raw sewage, okay, in water and samples that are 1.7 million times more dangerous than what they have in other parts of the world. That's not right, Tony. If you're talking about the money that is spent on the Olympics with the International Olympic Committee and the money that they generate, I'm sorry, that's just not right.
Then don't go.
You know what, Tony? Then don't go is right. But you cannot tell me that if you're a swimmer and you find out you get to your venue and that the water is that dangerous, I mean, are you going to think twice about it? You're damn right you are. Don't give me the
–
Tony, stop it, all right? I mean, come on now. You're going to work your whole life to be an Olympic athlete and you get there and the venue that you are participating in is toxic? I'm sorry. You can't tell me that that's right.
No, it's not right. Not right, but there's a lot of things that aren't right here where we live at, where I live at in Modesto, where parts of Stockton where I live at, where I've been at, and parts of Sacramento where I've been at. There's things that go on that aren't right, and we don't have a choice in the matter. You're born there, you live there, you're raised there, and you get out if you can. And you don't go somewhere that's dangerous if you don't have to.
All right. Well, again, that's one way of looking at it. I think it's a travesty what's gone on in Rio with these Olympics in certain sections of the city. I think it's a travesty.
You're probably right, man.
All right, thanks. Right. I'm not, I've never been to Rio. You know, if you're from Brazil, I'm not ripping on your country here. Okay, I'm only talking about what has been reported. All right, I'm sure there are great areas of Rio. You know, I'm sure that there are beautiful parts of the city that aren't affected by this. But unfortunately, there are a lot of parts of the city that are being affected by this. And I can't just ignore those, you know, because of the Olympic Games. And if you're an Olympic athlete and this has been your dream, and you get to your venue and it's basically unhealthy, not just a little unhealthy, but a lot. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not right. There's something really wrong with that. All right, we're going to talk with Joe Stiglitz from CSN California about what the A's did today. We'll do that next here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Busy day, as we have been mentioning since 3 o'clock. A lot of trades, including the Oakland A's. Joe Stiglitz, the A's insider on Comcast Sportsnet California, joins us here on the Grant Napier Show. Joe, not shocking. We knew the A's would be sellers. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, Grant, like, you're right. No shock they ended up selling. They were gonna have to run off going a really hot winning streak here, and that probably still doesn't even get them in ballpark contention here in the second half. So, not surprising they decided to sell. I was a little surprised they packaged two guys and sent them both to the same team, but I think the A's think they were kind of maximizing their return and what they got that way, and what they got was some young pitching. And it's definitely the A's way when they decide to sell to try to stockpile that young pitching. You've seen how injuries have really hit their pitching staff this year, so. Seems like they have three really quality pitching prospects they got from the Dodgers. So I think from that standpoint, it was right to go young. It was probably right to go with the pitching. And once again, they're looking ahead to next year. I know we were saying the same thing this time last year also.
Well, here's the bottom line. You know, you can be realistic about the situation, or you can, you know, make believe that you're better than you are. And I like what the A's did. You know, we love Josh Reddick. I mean, I say we. I mean, the Oakland fans love Josh Reddick. They love what they saw from Hill. But the bottom line is you're not winning with those guys. So you have to think for the future. I mean, that's the way Oakland has to do it.
Yeah, no doubt. And remember, this is a team that thought it had built this year to win this year. They liked the team they had going into spring training. They liked the depth they had, the versatility and everything. And it just has not worked out at all. So, you know, they kind of put themselves in this hole the first half they had. And you're looking at it right now, they'd have to go 38-19 the rest of the way just to get to 85 wins, and even that wouldn't guarantee you a wild card spot. So they're in this spot right now. I think they kind of had no choice but to go the route they did today.
You know, I've listened to Bob Melvin in the past years, you know, talk about this. And, you know, the reality is it wasn't that long ago where the A's were buyers and tried to, you know, make the big move to have someone that could beat Justin Verlander when they got John Lester. And we know that didn't turn out the way we wanted to. So, but Bob Melvin, I've heard him talk. I mean, when you take the job as Oakland A's manager, this comes with the territory. And I think you know that, don't you?
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, the challenge is going to be, and I think you and I probably talked about that at this time last year, is going to be to continue to motivate these guys to play in the now and play as if there's still something to play for over these next 2 months. And we're going to see some young guys, some new faces come up, I think. You know, we've seen Chalmanai come up. You know, Graven's doing well. Daniel Mingan's gotten his shot, even though he's down in the minors now. I think we're going to see more of these young pitchers come through. And maybe one of the young guys they got today, a right-hander, Jarrell Cotton is in. He's going to start out at AAA, but David Forks mentioned today on a conference call we could see Cotton up with the big club at some point this year. And we'll see if some of their really talented infielders who are at AAA and AA make the big jump. They've got some really talented guys that they think highly of. We could see them at some point, maybe in September when rosters expand.
Joe Stiglitz, the A's insider from CSN California. I got to tell you, Joe, you know, if I'm looking at this division and the favorite coming out of spring training were the Astros based on what they did last year, and you see what Texas did and what Houston did not, I mean, they're only five back in a loss column. Aren't you a little surprised at the lack of aggressiveness by the Astros based on what type of team they have and the fact that at the beginning of the day they were only five back in a loss column?
Yeah, no doubt. And you know what? They spent a lot of their farm system ammunition last year on big trades, but they still have what's considered, I think, one of the deeper farm systems to make moves. So from that standpoint, I am a little surprised. You know, they think a lot of the young guys they bring up, and they tend to promote a lot of guys during the year, and I think they think they get a boost internally from a lot of guys in that farm system. But you would have thought they would have done a little bit more. You look at Texas. I mean, the Astros have been nipping at their heels now. They're one of the hotter teams in the majors, and the Rangers, you know, responded to the Astros and really made a couple of big impact moves, it looks like. Getting Lucroy, getting Beltran. Maybe the Astros didn't quite do that, so then maybe they have a lot of confidence in the current team they have moving forward. I'll say this about the AL West. It's definitely a two-team race. Texas only has to worry about Houston and vice versa, but Astros probably didn't do as much as they could have done.
Has this year surprised you with the way the AL West has gone?
It has a little bit from the standpoint of I saw the Mariners as a real swing team. I thought they could be really good and make a lot of improvements over last year. They started out good this year. They've obviously fallen back in the pack since then. So they were the team that I think they changed the complexion of this division and really made it into a tough three-team race. We thought the A's would be better. We thought the Angels would be better. But I don't know if it's too surprising to see both those teams struggling. But the Mariners, to me, made a really big splash in the offseason. They were really busy. They got a new GM, a new manager in place, and they got off to a good start. Just hasn't quite worked out. So I saw Texas and Houston as the cream of the crop of this division. I just thought they had at least one more team, you know, pushing them a little bit more.
Joe Stiglitz joining us, the A's insider from CSN California. You know, you mentioned about, you know, getting these guys to play, and I'm curious, is there one or two veterans that Bob Melvin can lean on, you know, from a player's perspective to make sure that guys are ready to go every game?
Well, you know what, you look at Stephen Vogt, I think especially among the position players, it begins and ends with Stephen Vogt as far as that leadership goes. So they still have him in the clubhouse, and Vogt's a big guy. He's a big guy to really just kind of keep. He's a big glue guy. I mean, he keeps that clubhouse together in a lot of ways, I think. He's a big motivational guy. He's a big bat in the middle of that lineup. So having him is big. But also, they've got a couple of veteran relievers they brought in this year, Ryan Madsen and John Axford. Even though it's their first year, I think they wield a lot of influence to the pitching staff. So they've got some veteran guys who I think can still keep it together. And I actually thought a couple of those relievers could also be on the move today. I hope the A's might make some more moves, more than the one trade that they did.
Joe, the one I think maybe the most surprising part of the A's this year has been the ineffectiveness of Sonny Gray. What's your take on that?
Boy, it's a head-scratcher, and I think the A's themselves would probably tell you the same thing right now. Pitcher Kurt Young, I think everybody's trying to put their finger on what's going on with Sonny, and all I can tell you is I think there's a lot of truth to the theory that up until this year he had never struggled like this at any level, and he's really having a hard time just kind of getting it back on track. And it's funny, when you look at his starts, there's a pattern sometimes. He's off to a nice start, and he looks like he's going to have a really sharp outing, and then all of a sudden there'll be one inning where it just kind of comes apart for him, and he's not able to put the brakes on. And we saw that at Cleveland yesterday, where I believe it was a third inning, they get five runs off of him, and he just really couldn't stop the bleeding there. So I don't know what to tell you about that. You wonder if it's a physical issue, but he went on the DL, came back healthy from that, it looked like. So, you know, Sonny says it's as simple as a location issue. He's just missing on a lot of pitches. Just the bizarre thing is he's getting a two-strike count, doesn't put guys away. He's getting a two outs in an inning and can't finish off the inning. That's something we're not used to seeing. I don't know what to tell you right now. I think it's something to watch over the last 2 months here.
Hard to believe, right? We're talking about, you know, August 1st, and he's got an ERA approaching 6. You know, what is it, 5.85 or something? I mean, that's just – it's mind-boggling.
We thought he was the one for sure thing that you could count on this rotation with all the question marks they had in the spring, and it turns out he's the biggest question mark himself right now.
Joe Stiglitz, A's insider from CSN California. You got a podcast too, right? How can people find that? What type of material do you have on that?
Yeah, Grant, I'm having fun with it. I started it this year. I do it once a week, and I usually pick an A's player, sometimes a coach, or even an opposing player or opposing broadcaster, and just talk about. It's just a chance to do an extended long form interview, and it's conversational. I'm really enjoying it. Fans can find it at csncalifornia.com. You can also subscribe to it on iTunes. You just do a search for the A's Insider Podcast with Joe Stiglitz, and you do that, you can catch up on all the past episodes I've done going all the way back to spring training. So I hope people check it out, and I'm having fun doing it.
Joe, you talk about the fans. I've been taking calls today from A's fans, and listen, I don't have to tell you the narrative. I mean, they're frustrated beyond belief because it's almost like a broken record, and it's blah, blah, blah. And I don't really have an answer other than, hey, love your team, and hopefully one of these years, you know, you'll push through. There was 3 good years recently where they won the division every year and, you know, had a game 5 to advance to the ALCS and lost to Justin Verlander. I mean, I get the frustration. I really do. I don't see the light necessarily at the end of the tunnel for these fans, and that's the tough part for me.
Yeah, and I think the tough thing for fans is they turn over the roster so much. They're always bringing young guys in, and those young guys seem to be engaging, energetic guys, and fans that attach themselves to these players pretty quickly because they're likable guys.
Right.
And they try hard, and there's no egos, and fans kind of attach themselves quickly. And just when you get used to these guys being around a few years, I put Josh Reddick in that category. They're on the move again now. You know, in 2012, they kind of caught lightning in a bottle, and they made some trades to kind of win now, and maybe it didn't work out in the big picture, but at least you had three straight postseason appearances, and now it's been a step backwards again the last couple of seasons. So more rebuilding right now. All I can tell you is they've got a pretty stacked farm system of some talented position players that if I tell you their names, nobody's going to recognize them right now, but I think maybe by next spring or sometime next season, maybe a couple of them in this September make their presence felt, and they've got some young talent of taking care of this, doing the job when you still got these guys in an A's uniform. That's the way it works.
Yeah, speaking of a guy in the A's uniform, how much more baseball do you think Coco Crisp has left?
Yeah, that's a good question. 36 years old right now. When he's been in the lineup, well, he got off to kind of a slow start. Seems like since the All-Star break, he's picked it up a little bit. But, you know, as far as the A's go, his contract, the way it's set up, if he reaches 130 games played, an automatic $13 million option kicks in. That's a lot of money to pay to somebody whose production is going down at his age. The A's are trying to get a look at Jake Smolinski, and they're going to get a look at some other young outfielders this season. So I don't think Coco's going to get that 130-game mark. So I think the A's are going to buy out his contract for, I think it's $750,000 they could buy it out for, and maybe they turn him loose. Now, maybe he comes back as a free agent and they
right.
Use to a maybe discount contract, but this could be Coco's last season in Oakland, I think.
Yeah. Joe, good stuff. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, Joe Stiglich from CSN California, the A's insider. It's just tough. Again, it is very difficult to tell the A's fans, oh, hang in there, do this, do that. I mean, I get the frustration. I really do. And I don't necessarily have a solution for you. I really don't. All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We've got a lot of things that we've gone over today. Top of the list, the trade deadline in Major League Baseball. We've got the training camps going on of the Raiders and the 49ers, the Olympic Games starting this weekend. So, you know, and we got an NFL football game to look forward to this weekend. I know it's preseason. I know it's the Hall of Fame. I don't care. You know what? I don't care. It's football. It's the National Football League. That's all I care about. That's it. We'll be actually watching football. I'm okay with that. We'll be right back. This is the Grant Napier Show on Sports 1140 KHTK. Final segment on what has been a very busy Monday, thanks to the trade deadline. Got some scores to go over in Major League Baseball. It's Kansas City in the bottom of the ninth. They are leading in Tampa by the score of 3-0. Tampa with only one hit in that ballgame. And again, they're in the bottom of the ninth with two out. Elsewhere in the eighth, the Twins are in Cleveland, and they're leading the Tribe by the score of 11-3. Mets and Yanks are playing at Citi Field in Queens. And the Mets are leading the Yankees by the score of 5-3, that ballgame in the top of the eighth. In the bottom of the fifth at Wrigley, the Cubs on top by the score of 2-0. They've gone to the bottom of the sixth. They are scoreless in Houston with the Jays and the Strohs. Just underway in Arizona, top of the first. You got Washington and Arizona. And coming up a little bit later, Boston at Seattle and Milwaukee and San Diego. Of course, the big news, and we've gone over all the trades in Major League Baseball today, but the Giants end up getting Will Smith, a relief pitcher from Milwaukee. They go out and get Matt Moore from Tampa, so they add to their rotation. The Dodgers get Josh Reddick. They get Rich Hill. And maybe the best thing that they did is they left Yasiel Puig in L.A. when they went to Colorado to start a series tomorrow. I think the Dodgers, so much better. The atmosphere in that clubhouse, in that locker room, will be so much better without Yasiel Puig. Looks like the Dodgers are sending him down to the minors, if you can believe that. I don't know if we'll ever see Yasiel Puig play for the Dodgers again. And I think, you know, that would be something I would be very concerned about if I'm San Francisco, because I think not having Puig around that team is going to make everybody better. I still think the Giants win the division. I still think they have a better team. I'm not sold on what I've seen from Casilla this year, and I think we all know that that's going to be your closer coming down the stretch. So Melanson is signed, or excuse me, traded to Washington. They have a legitimate closer. The Cubs have arguably the best closer or one of the best closers in baseball in Chapman. And the Giants have a guy that, well, we've seen him do it before because Casilla did it 2 years ago in the World Series. But that was 2 years ago. And I still go back and wonder if when we get to October, if you don't give the edge to the Cubs and the Nats because of the closers. Now, you could say, well, the Giants, they go closer by committee, whether it's Romo, whether it's Casilla, you know, whereas in the World Series against Kansas City, you even had Madison Bumgarner come out of the pen. You're right. They've proven that they can do that. But the Nationals, their big weakness, and you saw it on full display at AT&T this past weekend, is their bullpen. Well, getting Melanson from Pittsburgh, he is a legitimate, no doubt about closer. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The Cubs, big weakness. You know, getting that horse to come out of the pen, well, they got that guy. His name's Aroldis Chapman. And the Giants, they went out and got a starter in Matt Moore and a lefty strikeout guy in Will Smith from Milwaukee. So, as they say, stay tuned, and we'll see what the end result of that's going to be. I can't fault the Giants for trying to go out and get some trade some prospects to win now. All right? I don't see how anyone can fault that. Now, what about some more information on Matt Moore? Again, left-hander. He's 7-7 this year with an ERA of 4.08 in 21 starts. Now, 2 years ago, he had Tommy John surgery, and he missed, you know, obviously over a year coming back from that. So now he is, you know, a lot of people were, I heard a lot of discussion on this earlier. He is arbitration eligible for next season, even though he's got a 5-year deal worth $14 million that he signed with Tampa back in 2011. Good news for the Giants, they're in first place. They've got a 2-game lead over the Dodgers. The Dodgers, to me, strengthened their ball club considerably by getting Reddick and Hill. Now, you just have to wait and see, you know, how this thing is going to end up coming down the stretch. You look at the Giants, and it seems like when they need to win against the Dodgers in head-to-head competition, they're able to do so. Without Clayton Kershaw, and again, we do not know the status of him, but if Clayton Kershaw is not able to come back, I just can't see the Dodgers winning the division. You know, I just don't see it. You know, Rich Hill's having a really good year. He's not Clayton Kershaw, but he will give them a boost. He will give them a boost. There's no doubt about it. But when I'm looking at the schedule, now that we're in August, all right, the big series coming up this weekend in Washington, and then the Giants are home for a while, and then they see the Dodgers in L.A. Later this month, the 23rd, the 24th, and the 25th, those three games down in Los Angeles. Then when you look at head-to-head competition, you've got the Dodgers in L.A. on the 19th, 20th, and 21st of September. And at home, beginning the 30th, the 1st, and the 2nd to wrap up the season. So that's your head-to-head competition that lies ahead for the Giants. Now, the Giants have a rough start to September, in my opinion, because they have a four-game set at Chicago against the Cubs. That is not going to be easy. Then they go from there to Colorado, then to Arizona, and then they come home before they take on the Dodgers again on the road the 19th, 20th, and 21st. But I like having those final three games at AT&T. You know, if you look at the rest of this month for San Francisco, after I said the Phillies, the Nats, they have to go to the Marlins, and then they come home to take on the first-place Orioles, which maybe they're not in first place. Then they have the Pirates and the Mets. I told you about the three games in L.A. I mean, once they get home from this next road trip, they're home the rest of the month with the exception of three games. So they got a they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. They have 16 of 19 games at home. Yeah, that's unbelievable. Actually, 15 of 18 at home. That's incredible. So they just got to get through this next road trip. I think they're going to be fine. All right, thanks for joining us. I look forward to being back with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Make it a great evening. And thanks for listening to the Grant Napier Show on your home for the best live and local coverage of the National Football League. Sports 1140 KHTK.